Around the NFL podcast is going to lock it up.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Oh, yeah. It is the big preview show. For the first time this season, 16 games to talk about.
Not the last time.
Got up to packed show.
Next week as well.
But I said first time. No Thursday night football. First time you don't hear that at the top of a Thursday show. And Greg, we're gonna really need the Greg Rosenthal playoff calculator online today. We got to make sure no one picks up a phone in a different room. We need that 56K to hook up because this is where you make your money. Greg.
Greg Rosenthal playoff calculator now online.
I like the nugget about someone else picking up the phone. That would constantly throw me offline back in those ages.
That was an automatic disconnect.
Yep. An absolute nightmare if you're trying
to
accomplish
things. All the millennials
are
like, what the hell are you talking about?
It's called history.
Yes, 16 games to talk about. And what's your favorite game? What game are you looking forward to the most, Mark, in week 16? Brownies getting that W?
I have my eye on that game. I will leave it
you
at
need
that.
This
I don't
one.
Know if what I'm looking forward to is how I'd put it, but it's on my radar. I have my eye on it.
There's a lot of games with no juice that kind of it doesn't really matter. It's like, that game matters.
It does.
If nothing else, the Browns are playing games that matters.
I think Wes joins me here, too. I've enjoyed the Niners down the stretch, so I've
Jags
asked,
Niners
asked to watch that game.
Sneaky fun game.
All right. You guys want to get into it?
Let's get into it.
We're here to talk football, right?
By the way, big ups to our group. We encountered, our show is beginning a little bit late because we encountered a studio riddled with crumbs and pie pieces all over the desk where we broadcast from, and we quickly got that cleaned up so that we can get the show going.
Yeah, Damashek and Money and Cynthia and Handsome Hank, they ran a little long with their time, which, you know, it happens. It happens to us too sometimes. But then there's just crumbs everywhere. And then I pick up the headset because I use the same chair as Sheck, and the actual mouthpiece has crumbs all over it, which is a little bit beyond the pale.
That's a little bit beyond borders there with the mannerisms. Yeah.
I'll have to tweet that photo out. All right, let's get into the game. Everybody ready now?
Please.
Wes, I see your velour suit jacket.
What is that? Velvet? That's beautiful. Velvet.
That is 100% pure sex is what that is, Wes.
This was picked out by me and not the paramour.
Really?
Yeah, I've had to, because of the massive weight loss, I've had to buy a whole new wardrobe, essentially. So I like the look that Mark often has with the jacket and jeans. I needed that look in my life.
I use Mark as a compass for fashion as well.
All right. Well, I'll say one thing. I feel like Greg put a nice effort in on his outfit, and he's been upstaged by Wes. And I would like to say that Greg's, I don't know what it is.
It's like a sort of a cardigan, very holiday.
A black on black, though. A black cardigan on a black T-shirt. It's
like
going back to your
going
roots.
To a funeral on Christmas Eve.
Greg often reminds me of Johnny Cash.
Strong, silent type. Let's get into the games. Here we go. Let's start in order. We always go in order. And this is the 1 week. And a reminder, we will not have a Sunday night show this week because of Christmas. Tuesday is when we'll go over all these games. But the week 16 games play out over 3 days. And they start on Saturday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern kickoff. The Indianapolis Colts, 3-11, travel to Baltimore to face the Ravens, who are 8-6. The Ravens lost that heartbreaker against Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago, got healthy against Cleveland, and now they have a very good chance, Mark Sessler, to get to 10-6 with a win at home against Indy and then get Cincy in week 17. They look like a really good setup for a playoff team, right?
Yeah, I mean, barring something utterly illogical in a week-to-week NFL, you're absolutely right. I do look at a team, the Ravens, that are 1-5 against teams they encounter with a winning record. And so let's say they get in the playoffs, and it's the Patriots, Steelers, Jaguars, Chiefs. I'll throw the Chargers in there out of personal delight, and the Ravens. Which one of those teams is Baltimore better than?
Chiefs. I think they're competitive with any team.
Competitive,
right,
but I'm saying
I think they can
are,
win
are
a
they
game.
Better than any of those?
I don't think they're much of an underdog in my mind, at least with whoever they play in the first round, which will probably be Kansas City or Jacksonville.
Since they're bye, they are 4-1 with an average score of 31-17, And that only loss was the one that Pittsburgh came back, and it was their best offensive performance of the year.
They're a different team than they were earlier on.
Right. That game more than anything kind of convinced me, all right, like the first 8 weeks, 10 weeks of the season, they sort of don't make any difference. It's how you look.
Just
right
surviving
now.
Them.
Yep. Alex Collins not looking healthy, though, and he is such a key part of their team. They spelled him a little bit last week, and it's the first he's had injury problems in the past. Maybe the workload's catching up. He's someone I'm kind of going to watch closely this week, see how he's looking.
Cleveland shut him down.
Any other thoughts on this game?
The Colts are in trouble because the Ravens absolutely pummel tomato cans, and especially bad quarterbacks. The Colts rank 31st in offensive DVOA by Football Outsiders and 31st in drive success rate. As much promise as Jacoby Brissett has shown, he's not been a good quarterback this year.
Well, I think he was good for about half the season, but he is struggling to come down the stretch like the rest of this team. They were bad to begin with, and they're incredibly injury-plagued. Like, I saw this week John Bostic went on IR, and he's their leading tackler.
Mr. John Bostic.
And I thought, John Bostic is their leading tackler? Like, that's not a good sign.
It seemed to be a little bit of a rush to crown Jake Brissett as a potential real franchise quarterback.
Holds the ball too long.
Piece of that, Jake. I think he has a chance to be a good quarterback. I think he's been pretty good for a second year player
I was impressed.
A really tough situation.
Yeah, he came in and learned the offense and showed promise right away, which, I mean, I'm watching quarterbacks every week that aren't doing that. He's not perfect, though.
The Ravens are very opportunistic. They're plus 17 turnover differential, best in football, so you can expect some shenanigans to happen with the Colts on offense potentially. And one positive note on the Colts offense. So this one's for you, Greg.
Oh.
Frank Gore last week went over 1,000 yards from scrimmage. He is just the fourth player since 2012 to go over 1,000 yards, 34 years or older.
Mm.
So it's nice career by your boy.
He'll get to 1,200 yards.
Get
like
that plug
11
in.
Straight times.
Get the
nah,
plug
we're
in.
Good. We're good now. It's passed.
No, it's fine. NFL.com/Frank Gore.
John Riggins.
I think he might play next year. I think he's played well enough to get a job somewhere. And
I hope the Colts upgrade.
It won't be an indie.
Let's move on. The Minnesota Vikings, 11-3. They are in line. They have a shot here to get the first seed still. And now they travel to Green Bay on Saturday night. Here's a bummer game. And we were tweeting a little bit back and forth, Greg Rosenthal and I, yesterday. This would have been a really, really fun Saturday night game to watch. And then Aaron Rodgers and the Packers couldn't get it done against the Panthers. Rodgers officially sent to injured reserve on Wednesday. Devontae Adams, who got concussed on that cheap shot from Thomas Davis, he's not going to play in this game. So it looks like the Vikings, Wes, have a very golden opportunity to get to 12-3 going into Week 17.
I don't think it's a gimme game. The Vikings are the much better team. The Packers tend to be a little. I'm not going to say they're. In any way, are they better off without Rodgers? But they are a more balanced offense with a stronger running game when Rodgers isn't in there. But the Vikings are so much better. And Case Keenum is the NFL's highest rated passer since week 10, 111 rating. He's compared this offense to driving a Lamborghini.
Ooh.
And when you see guys like Jerick McKinnon, who to me reminds me so much of last year's Tevin Campbell, with his sharp cuts and his home run ability, and Pat Shermer's ability to get him the ball in space to make people miss. So he reminds me of Tevin Coleman. And I think Stephon Diggs, people forget, Adam Thielen made the Pro Bowl, but Diggs was the better receiver in September before he injured his groin. Diggs is a bit of an X factor going into the playoffs. They could have a wide receiver core that's as good as anybody's.
There are so many potential vacancies opening up that Pat Shermer may wind up again as a head coach for what he's done this season. This Vikings team, what I like about them, I feel like they've flown, even though they're the number two seed and they're going to hold on to that because they play the Bears next week, they, to me, have flown under the radar. I think people are waiting for the other shoe to drop still if they're not watching them weekly because someone named Case Keenum is their quarterback. But they are the only team in the league with top 10 passing offense, rushing offense, passing defense, and rushing defense. They are complete everywhere. I cannot believe Harrison Smith did not make the Pro Bowl. That's outrageous.
Wild.
The Pro Bowl is a joke.
And I think the Pro Bowl, for once I looked at like the snubs list, I was like, yeah, there's only two or three really crazy ones. But Harrison Smith, Cam Hayward were two of the ones that stuck out to me. The Vikings, I think, are really battle-tested. They had that five-week stretch where they played the best teams in the NFC, and it was almost like a playoff scenario. Keenum's trying to keep his job. They go 4-1 in that stretch. Then they come out of that and bash a cupcake last week, and at this point, I think the Packers, you know, might be a cupcake. They're kind of looking ahead. I'm looking ahead and wondering, is this finally the year Dom Capers goes? Gosh, it feels like it.
Never, bro.
He's unkillable.
They gave up 29 first downs to the Panthers last week. Is this the year, you know, they make a decision about cutting Jordy Nelson? You know, even when Rodgers came back, that did not save him whatsoever. Randall Cobb's making a lot of money. It's just, I feel like there's a lot of decisions here. Clay Matthews is another guy maybe could get cut. No pass rush last week.
To the point that the Vikings, Lamborghini's a little strong, but 28 points a game over the last 7 weeks, that is not a small sample size. They've been scoring points in bunches.
They got to be the slight favorite. If we got to pick a favorite, aren't they the slight favorite in the NFC? Aren't they the slight favorite?
I would take the Rams.
The Rams are very dangerous, but I would take the Vikings over the Eagles right now.
What is the path to the one seed for Minnesota?
They need the Eagles to lose twice, so that's
they got to win out, and the Eagles got to lose out.
But they will get it. They'd have to trip up entirely to not get the bye. They're locked in for that.
Let's move on. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers came close to forcing overtime against the Falcons on Monday night. Couldn't do it. So now in a short week, they go to Charlotte to face the Panthers, another team with a lot to play for, looking to win their division, looking to maybe get a first-round bye if some things go their way. So here's another, as we're going through these early games in Week 16, another mismatch on paper, Greg.
It is, because I trust the Panthers more right now and because Cam Newton is playing so well. Last 3 weeks, he has got the job done. Not all with, you know, through the air, but the X factor of him picking up third and eights, third and nines on the ground, I think he's playing really well. And they're a team on paper, you think maybe they're a little lucky, they lead the league in one score wins. But it sort of doesn't matter now, because I think they're about at their best right now. They have McCaffrey playing his best of the season. Olsen is back and playing. And Demir Bird's kind of been a factor. He helps their offense. They are in better shape now to maybe make a Super Bowl run than any point all season.
It's crazy that we think of this as kind of a defense first team with an inconsistent offense. But since they traded Kelvin Benjamin, since week 10, they lead the NFL in scoring offense, rushing yards per game, and red zone TD percentage. They are a different team than people think they are. And like you said, it's Cam running the ball. They score touchdowns on 14% of their drives when Cam does not have a designed run, but that goes up to 36%, which is one of the highest rates in history when he does have a designed run.
In their defense, last four games, 27, 31, 24, and 24 points. This isn't the Panthers of 2015 knocking people down. No one's scoring more than 10, 12 points against them.
And they're much different on defense. They have a new defensive coordinator. They never used to blitz in the past. Now they're the most blitz-happy team in the league. And their defensive coordinator, Steve Wilks, could be getting a head coaching interview jobs. Like, that's kind of the sneaky Ron Rivera coaching tree over there.
The sneaky Ron Rivera coaching
tree. I'm just saying. He
sneaky
produces,
little tree.
Produces some
that's
coaches.
A branch of the Andy Reid coaching
yeah,
tree.
Yeah, that's fair.
The Greg Olsen development of him, and we were talking about on Sunday, how he has that late career Keith Hanzus kind of hitch to his giddy up, but he's still a producer. Olsen going 9 for 116 and a touch. That adds a huge element to their offense and Cam. So that I agree.
They haven't lost a game when he's in there.
NFC
5-0 with Olsen on the field.
It sucks that Carson Wentz is not involved, but the NFC is still going to be a great playoff situation.
Panthers Falcons next week is kind of the week 17 game I'm circling. No matter what, that game's going to matter.
All right, let's move on and talk about the Cleveland Browns traveling to Chicago to face the Bears. Not a ton of intrigue here. John Fox, he's history. Hugh Jackson, it looks like he's going to be head coaching somewhere. Whether it's in Cleveland, Cincinnati,
I don't get the.
But who
the,
knows?
The demand for this guy in multiple cities in Ohio. I'm not quite sure.
I mean, if you got a chance to get the guy who's directed the fewest wins in a 2-season span in the history of,
what else would you do?
It's a little weird. You wonder what photos he has of who. But here's the good news. Here's the upshot, Mark. The downshot is that you're 0-14. And next week,
I don't like downshot.
And neither do I. And next week, you got Pittsburgh and a Steelers team that might really need it. The upshot, the Bears, they're the Bears. They've been terrible during John Fox's entire run. And even if you do lose this game, you do clinch that number one pick, and you will have, barring a Brownsian mishap, a hot shot young quarterback in a few months.
Right now, there is no upshot. Look,
downshot.
I really want them to get the number one pick. I don't want anyone else to control that. But here's the thing: You go 0-16, no one's ever going to forget about it. And everyone attached to this team, it's an utter embarrassment. And I don't look at this as a game that they can go in and call themselves the better team necessarily. I think Cleveland may have the better roster, but I'm not sure the coaching, especially on offense, has gotten the most out of a lot of those players. The Bears beat up the Bengals 2 weeks ago and lost to the Lions by 10 points when Trubisky really came unraveled, I thought, and threw some bad picks and turned the ball over. I think Chicago is not an automatic out for Cleveland. Cleveland is the one of the worst. Well, I'm just saying, I get that everyone's saying this is their chance to win.
People
this
say that every week.
Right, but no one, they're an underdog in any game.
They should
their
be. They are the worst red zone offense I think I have ever watched in my entire life, and it tracks to, and you know what, Kaiser is not ready for the job, but I feel like they shattered his confidence 2 months ago, and that's on coaching too. So
sure
I don't
is.
Think Cleveland comes out of this 1-14. I think they come out of this 0-15. And I'm so sure.
Oh, no.
No.
I'm throwing Lindsay for a curveball.
Don't do this. Don't do this to the Browns.
I'll do whatever I want because I'm riding high on the. I have gotten locks right week after week. I'm locking up the Bears.
Oh. You know what? Lindsay, let's do a lock off. I'm locking up the Brownies.
This
let's
is the greatest
go,
thing that has ever happened. Dan is
let's
one
go.
Game ahead of me.
Let's go.
And I just coaxed Dan into locking up the Browns.
It's going to happen.
My work is done.
Going on.
I don't know what happened.
That was
Mark.
All strange. There's like
I don't need
it seems
you to approve
wrong
it.
On the holiday.
I don't need you to approve
it's
it.
It's not in the holiday spirit
there
to pick
is,
a lock against
this is
against your own Brown.
It is absolutely fine. I've locked them
you're
up three
getting,
times this season
you're
and have
win.
Been destroyed
I get,
by
I get it.
Them.
This is for
win,
the
win.
City of Cleveland. This is my gift to you. Mark may have abandoned you. I will not do it. There's going to be an
you
urgency.
You can PR this. You can add your public relations spin all you want. No one buys that I'm not a Browns fan. No one cares who I'm locking up in Cleveland.
The Browns, there's going to be a level of urgency because they know the Week 17 situation.
It's a big deal to go.
And
yes, it is. But it was a big
Bears,
deal a month ago.
The Bears stink, and I think the Browns have come close. I think this is when it's going
to
happen.
If the Browns suddenly have awoken to the fact that they need to win a game, I'd be very concerned about the organization from head to toe. I don't think there's this awakening that's occurred now.
Let's go, Brownies!
Suddenly, this is the biggest game on Christmas Eve. Browns Bears.
Oh, this is fun. Mark, come on, baby.
I like it.
Let's
I'm
go.
One
Let's
game
play.
Behind you in the lockoff. I want that trophy that you think you're going to get.
All right, so now you want the trophy, too. It's all coming out.
Well, we're getting a trophy either way. Better sit on my desk. How
Lindsay's
about that?
Working on the
Can't
trophy.
Can't wait.
You're working on the trophy, right?
Oh,
Lindsay?
Yeah. We're working on it. We got big things planned for the trophy. Can't wait to see
oh,
it.
Oh, another lockoff. All right, let's
I
move on.
It.
The Detroit Lions, 8-6, hanging around. This is what they do. They hang around. They annoy everybody. And then they get in the back door of the playoff race, and then they get smoked in the wild card round. Maybe it changes this year. They got the Cincinnati Bengals. And again, a game on paper, Chris Wessling, that appears to be a mismatch because Cincinnati's been the worst team in football for 2.5 games.
Well, the Lions are sort of like the NFC's version of the Ravens. They are 7-0 against bad teams and 1-6 against good teams. Mm. They pummel tomato cans, and the Bengals are absolutely a cupcake right now. They are.
They've been called cupcake twice now on this show.
The difference, I think, in coaching and surrounding talent is evidenced more by the Bengals than any team in the league. 2015, Andy Dalton and A.J. Green led one of the best offenses in franchise history. 2017, they're surrounded by dust. And they lead one of the worst offenses the Bengals have ever featured.
It proves your wisdom that you never wanted to move Andy Dalton off of the Dalton scale, you know, where quarterbacks above the line are franchise quarterbacks, below are not franchise quarterbacks. You never really bought into the Dalton great season totally. And now we're kind of seeing it's not totally his fault, but he rises and falls.
The knock on him has always been that he doesn't raise the play of people around him, that he is totally dependent on having a strong supporting cast, and I think that's borne out this year.
When I watch the Bengals, and it's been hard to do of late, I see a team that, like, organizationally, and this is a bad job by them, they waited an extra year, if not more, to blow this team up. We are looking at the team that should have been wiped away last offseason from head to toe. You find a new quarterback, you start to get real about that position, and you look at everything, and they did nothing. As they normally do in the offseason, they did nothing.
Lions fans, go ahead.
What do you guys think they'll do at quarterback going forward?
I think they'll keep Dalton, mostly.
I think you got to draft
someone. He's under contract, right?
And he's very cheap, too. For a franchise quarterback, he's making like $14 million next year. Like, you can go draft someone anyways. It'll depend on the new coach. But to me, Andy Dalton is kind of an asset at that price, and unless you got a better option. It's like, what are you going to do? Replace him with Alex Smith? That's not.
It just feels depressing to me if you don't go draft.
Yeah, draft.
The Bengals in the bag in the river, correct?
Draft.
On Sunday.
Yeah, they've been in the water for the entire week.
They are leading the league rankings in struggling to get to the finish line. Like, the season is just a horrible right. weight yeah. on them and their fans. They are number one. Number two, I've got a full top five here. Colts.
Okay.
Number two. Texans are number three. This season has just been pointless for a while for the Texans. The Redskins sneaking in, even though they have a good record at 6-8, there's just a misery and a pointlessness to all of that. And I'm going to put the Bears at number five because of their coaches. The Browns at least have something to play for.
They have embarrassment to try to prevent.
What did you title this index?
The struggling to get to the finish line rankings. I don't know.
Can the season please be
yes.
over?
Yes. Like, if any of these teams could just choose to end it.
Could
right
this
now.
Season end yeah. fast enough for the New York Giants? I feel like they.
That's fair. I overlooked it.
I think it's the kill us now rankings.
Yeah, and that's why the Lions fans probably don't feel like the luckiest fans in the world. Last year, won a lot of close games, had some excitement with a pretty uneven team, ended up making the playoffs. This year, you're playing the Bengals at the perfect time, and you play the Packers next week with Brett Hundley at the perfect time in Week 17. And I think the Lions have a very good chance to sneak into the playoffs. Let's hit that calculator here. It's not that tough. They are the team with...
Wait, you're not online yet.
No, I'm just... It's happening.
Now you're online. Go.
They are the team with all the NFC tiebreakers other than Atlanta. So all you got to do, it's real simple. Win these two games against two dead teams and watch the Falcons lose two in a row against the Saints.
That's a bigger problem.
Yeah, it is. But against in New Orleans and then home for Carolina, those are two tough games.
They could lose
Falcons
those games.
Teams. Not great.
A lot of these
I think
teams
it's
need the Falcons to lose out, and I think it's a tall order.
I think it's going to happen.
And so then Detroit's reward for that and for their fan base, which has not just had a bit of a tough time. That fan base has been through utter, endless hell, gets Jim Caldwell again next season.
Quite possibly. And the Rams
what a,
in the
what
first
a,
round, which
what
would be
a,
tough,
as Chris would say, a Pyrrhic victory of sorts.
That's a good point.
Before we move on to the next game on Tuesday's episode, which I heartily endorse and you should check out, with Connie Fox in the studio. We went around the room and nominated players, former players, that we'd like to see their numbers retired by their respective teams. I thought it was a really good exercise for Chris Wessling, who wasn't here, so now let's give him the opportunity.
Well,
Wes, nominate somebody.
I have broken up with the Bengals, but I maintain a deep appreciation and fondness for their 1970s and 80s teams. Anthony Munoz is, in my opinion, and the opinion of many people who study the game, the best offensive lineman in NFL history. Mm. The Bengals have retired one number ever, a center named Bob Johnson who played in the 70s. Anthony Munoz, who is way better than Bob Johnson, does not have his number retired.
That's so weird.
What did they just put a freeze on? Because some of these teams
was Bob Johnson anyone. That much better than other? I'm not too clued into his history, but is he truly the second best, let's say, Bengal of all time?
No, he won he went to a couple of Pro Bowls. This stems from Mike Brown, and I talked to Solomon Wilcots about this a couple of years ago. Mike Brown sort of has a 1930s mentality.
Yeah, I see.
His opinion is you don't do these rings of honor, you don't retire numbers, you don't celebrate your history because you don't put one player above the other 11 on that side of the ball, the other 22 on the team. He thinks it takes away from the team aspect of football.
The Patriots will now run out of the tunnel as a team.
I'm sure he's a lot of fun at the holiday party.
Anthony Munoz is a Hall of Famer. I don't know what else we need to do here.
All right, there you go. There's Wes's nomination. Let's now move on. The Miami Dolphins, 6-8. The charade that they were in the mix is no longer there because the Bills beat them handily last week. Now they go to Kansas City again. This is interesting this week so far, not in terms of like intrigue as much, but a lot of these teams that have a path to the playoffs or are in the mix have a nice path to get there if they just take care of business. The Chiefs are another team. They're home to Miami at Denver. Now Trevor Siemian's out of the mix. Is Brock Osweiler going to keep playing well? I don't know. But first things first, you got to beat the Dolphins at home. How do we feel about that, Greg?
I'd feel great if I'm a Chiefs fan because they win the division with a victory Chargers are done. Magic number is one. The Chiefs only need one, you know, combination of a loss by the Chargers or a win by the Chiefs. And I don't really see many reasons to buy into the Dolphins on the road. I have never seen a quarterback or a team in general, but especially a quarterback, look colder than Jay Cutler did last week in Buffalo. He just
didn't want to be there.
He looks like me in the cold. Just like he's sort of hunched over, and it's just like you just can see the misery on his face and the rest of that team.
He belongs in your power rankings of people waiting for the season to end and probably wishing it never started.
Well,
he should have retired on the Monday Night Football.
That's what I'm saying.
It would have annoyed all the Dolphins, but it would have been a great way to go out.
Because he looked plenty motivated 10 days ago or whenever it was.
It was warm there. It's like 77.
And then in the cold weather, he's like, eh. Maybe that's why he went to Miami.
What a weird season for Alex Smith, who has been one of the least effective deep ball passers throughout his Chiefs tenure. Then this year starts, and for the first quarter of the season, he's the best deep ball passer in the league by efficiency metrics. He goes through a midseason slump where people are actually calling for his benching for some bizarre reason. And since Matt Nagy took control of the offense, he's back to being the best deep ball passer in the NFL again.
And he's got the pressure of knowing very likely that this could be his last chance to make a long run as a member of the Chiefs.
I mean, with Nagy in there, 31, 26, and 30 points, the offense looks different. It's back to what it looked like, you know, before the leaves came off the trees. And is it Andy Reid still running the show with this offense? What is it that he's doing, do you think, that's so different? I mean, is he calling literally completely different game plans than Reed would have, who knows the offense so well? It's a bit hard to discern what the difference is between Reed and Nagy.
I don't know as far as specific play calls, but they're definitely run blocking better and running better, and then I think that has helped dial up those deep shots again.
Tony Romo mentioned it removes all your tendencies in one move.
That's true. Yeah.
And so for 3 or 4 weeks, teams have a trouble kind of knowing what those tendencies are.
By the way, this Chiefs versus Ravens is the most likely playoff matchup at 67% chance of happening. Mm.
Is that your playoff calculator?
That is not mine. I read that somewhere else.
Chiefs.
Exciting.
You know, the entire NFC, the top 5 seeds in the NFC aren't going to get back to the playoffs, or right now are teams that weren't even there a year ago. It's like the Chiefs, in the end, are probably going to get back with a home playoff game. They still, in their mind at least, have to feel like everything is in front of them and they get a shot.
All right, let's move on now. An AFC East game. Here's some stakes for you. The Buffalo Bills haven't been in the playoffs in almost 20 years, and now they have a shot. But they got to go to New England and beat the Patriots. And that is a tall order. Mark Sessler, because the Pats, coming off that win over the Steelers, are now lined up for that one seed, and they're not going to want to give that up.
I don't know about having a shot if you're Buffalo. You look at they are right now the 6th seed, as you said. Among those current playoff teams, they are the last in point differential, yardage differential, sack differential, points per game, and they are the 2nd in points allowed, worst. Among the current playoff quarterbacks, Tyrod Taylor is worst in passing yardage, touchdowns, yards per attempt, and sacks taken. I think this is the end of the Bills. 3 days away, they're done.
Probably. I mean, Tom Brady's 28-3 against the Bills. Not that that matters in this matchup, but they played it a couple weeks ago. McDermott goes with his own defense. They slow the Patriots down, but ultimately Brady did what he wanted in that game. It just took a while for them to score on these long drives. I just don't see why they would have enough answers unless LeSean McCoy and Tyrod Taylor as runners just take over the game and kind of make it into a low-scoring game that both teams are scoring
McCoy,
like a high percentage.
93 yards in that first matchup. They lost 23-3. He's going to have – I watched the Bills last couple weeks. I'm just not impressed with their offense on any level.
I will ask you this, Greg, throwing a V's question. So the touchdown drive, the ultimate game-winning touchdown drive where Gronk just went nuts and Brady and Gronk connected obscures maybe the fact that they weren't explosive against the Steelers. And if you go back to week 13 now, they are kind of a middling unit in all the major statistical rankings. Do you have any concerns that the offense is not quite right now, or did you see enough down the stretch against Pittsburgh?
No, I felt really good about that in terms of the offense in Pittsburgh. They moved the ball. That was a game of a low amount of possessions. They basically did what they want. They had the same yards per play as the Steelers. I think that was an offense-dominated game despite the score. And the same thing happened against the Bills. They were missing Chris Hogan. They're missing Rex Burkhead now. Maybe Hogan's back. I'm not too worried about the offense.
What is the Burkhead situation?
He is out this week, and And we'll see. It's a sprained knee.
One of those mysterious things. Oh.
People need to rewatch that Steelers game. First of all, it was a great game to rewatch. Second of all, it was one of Brady's best games of the year. His ball placement was phenomenal. And he did not look like a struggling quarterback, and they did not look like a struggling offense.
This is more sports, not takedown of what Wes just said, but he threw a ball right in the hands of a defender that would have short-circuited.
It was tipped at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, it was tipped at the line of scrimmage.
I never hold that against the quarterbacks.
Quarterback drops by the...
No, the tip balls. Anything can happen on a tip ball. I mean, if it's something that's like a regular problem, I'm not gonna.
Who's your boy on Cincinnati in the Super Bowl in 1990 that dropped the ball in the end zone? Joe Montana.
That was the 88 season, 89 Super Bowl. It was Lewis Billups in the end zone. We used to call him Third and Billups. Because you knew if it was a third down pass, it was going to be complete against Lewis Bill. Yeah.
That is one of the most crushing Super Bowl losses you could ever imagine.
Krumrie having the worst Super Bowl injury in history and then refusing to go to the hospital while his leg's broken in half.
They had to say, hey, if we don't get you out of here, you're going to go into shock and you could lose your leg. And that's what got him finally out of Joe Robbie Stadium, I believe it was. Before we move on, did you have something else, Greg?
I was just going to say, he reminded me about the Kelvin Benjamin trade.
Who's he? Pronoun.
Chris Wessling reminded me. The Kelvin Benjamin trade has not worked out too well. He has 120 yards in four games. The Jordan Matthews trade did not work out too well. Basically didn't do anything. The two of them have combined for under 500 yards this season in what's been kind of a full season out of the two.
Oof.
Disaster.
They're both banged up this year. But
the passing game is banged up all year.
Before we move on, I like this little subplot going on around the Patriots, that a report from the Boston Globe that Tom Brady's trainer, Alex Guerrero, who has actually a facility or a shop in the mall where they play their games, the Patriots, and there apparently is a rift between Guerrero and Belichick, according to the Globe, and it's reached the point where the Patriots have banned Guerrero from treating other players that aren't Brady. He's also reportedly banned from boarding the Patriots team jets, and his sideline access was revoked. Saucy. Mm. What's going on behind the scenes? First of all, your thoughts on that, Gregers?
Well, let's get the facts.
Ascension in the ranks.
First, let's get the facts straight. He is treating...
Well, let's get the facts straight.
Well, he's treating plenty of Patriots players. They just have to go to his office, which is 5 minutes away. So he wasn't banned from treating them. During the game, he was banned from treating them. He's still in the locker room. He's still like Tom Brady's guy. Clearly, Bill Belichick felt like at some point it was... It sounded like it was becoming a conflict between his training staff and Guerrero. And he decided to shut it down.
And Belichick before has talked, when they've asked about Brady's diet and Brady's X, Y, and Z, he has pointed to his own Patriots training staff over and over. Mm. I think there he's being loyal to his own guys.
He's no longer permitted to treat players other than Brady in the office.
Right.
Which makes sense, by the way.
Yeah, they just now they take a little cart that brings them 10 minutes, you know, it's like down the mall or whatever.
Anyway, some sad, some brave, doomed soul decided to ask Belichick about the situation. And here's the one thing that you need to know, because maybe I don't know who the reporter was. Maybe he is a veteran of the Belichick beat. But what you need to know, if you're going to ask Belichick something, especially something that probably isn't going to sit well with him, which is most things, but especially something where you know it's something that's maybe in the news and is negative or critical about the Patriots, that you better have a very concise question. Don't give Brady or Belichick anything to pick apart and distance himself. And that's what this reporter made the mistake of doing. Let's listen to how Belichick got out of this one.
Coach, would you say that Tom's relationship with his trainer is like if your adult son or child is hanging out with somebody you didn't really care for all that much? I mean, it's your adult child. What are you supposed to say?
I'm not really sure of the question. I mean, talking about my children, I don't think that's appropriate here. I'm trying to coach a football team.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make it I was just thinking.
What are we talking about here?
I just meant, is it something that kind of frustrates you because it takes the focus off of him taking coaching from you, in your opinion?
Again, there's a lot of pronouns there. Like, I don't really know who's talking about what.
Cut that, Lindsay. We want that pronoun drop.
It's cut.
You there?
I would just run out of the room.
No, that's a bad question.
Because here's the thing.
I like the sorry for Belichick at the end, and then he walked off.
Oh, he wasn't sorry.
Picture.
Belichick, and that's the thing. Belichick knows exactly what the guy's asking. He knows exactly what he was getting at. But if you give him that window where he can pick apart your question, if it's a little clunky, if it's a little bit of fat, the question.
It was pretty clunky.
Then you're never going to get an answer at all, and you're going to be made fun of, essentially.
Well, the follow-up question, the guy seemed to be utterly terrified. I don't
know. Oh, the last sentence he spoke was so timid.
He's
like, how fast can I get out of here?
I'm just kind of wondering maybe about...
There's a lot of pronouns out.
What I like about this situation is the contortionist act people are pulling off to relate it to Jimmy Garoppolo's recent success.
I've heard a lot of...
Oh, yeah, and all these reservations now that the Patriots must be having about going with Brady over Jimmy G.
Well, maybe they could. The reservation is not that to me, but maybe could we have gotten more than a second round pick for this guy?
Well,
still kind of think.
Yeah,
that's all timing.
That's
and
fair.
Limiting. From what I've read, Belichick did not want to trade him to an AFC team. He did not want to send him to Cleveland because he respected him too much to deal with Cleveland's mess of an organization.
He
so,
still hates them.
Yeah, I think that Cleveland was not an option for him, and he likes Jimmy G. so much, he respects him so much that he wanted him in the NFC.
I think the plan was to keep him. I really do. John Lynch said on the radio on Rich Eisen's show Thursday that we called them a couple times in the offseason and Belichick was just like, nah, we're keeping him.
Yeah.
There was no talk then, but they couldn't get a contract done.
If I was Big Mac, I would have said, hey, Billy, this is like you're the GM episode. I'll give you a second and a seventh. Let's make some magic.
I don't think Belichick
to the
wants
Jets?
The extra seventh.
What?
No, to the 49ers. Hey, you're right.
Draft capital
hey,
talks,
listen,
guys.
He traded Bledsoe to the Bills, but that was a different situation.
He
that
knew Bledsoe was done.
Right.
That was a trick. Let's move on. The Atlanta Falcons, 9-5. They have won 5 of 6 somewhat quietly, and they got by Tampa Bay on Monday night. And now, on a short week, they travel to New Orleans to face the Saints, who didn't play incredibly well against the Jets, but they took care of business to get to 10-4. So it's a one-game lead over the Falcons. Also, the Panthers in the mix there. This is going to be a great battle, Wes, or is it?
Well, I think the Saints are undoubtedly the superior team in this matchup. And even though the Falcons have won 5 of 6 games, they have not looked good doing it. They've had their fair share of luck. That said, I would warn against people giving this victory to the Saints, especially with Tevin Coleman coming back, Devontae Freeman coming off his best game of the year, and the Saints' run defense being picked on lately, even by the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
The Saints rank 26th in Football Outsiders' run defense metrics. You can beat them on the ground, and it would not surprise me to see this Falcons offensive personnel all back to full health now have a comeback game. I know Julio and Matt Ryan are struggling with their connection, but a 150-yard game even against Marshawn Lattimore would not surprise me.
Wow.
Kenny Vaccaro, by the way, not going to play in this game or any other game.
That will help the Saints defense.
Yeah, he is out for the season going to IR.
I do not think that helps the Saints defense.
Have you been watching him getting picked on with his defensive pass interference
but he's
penalties?
He's still better than the next guy, and he plays – he's good in run defense.
I think he's been playing injured, and people have been picking on him quite a bit.
A.J. Klein was a big injury for this team. He is now on injured reserve. He got hurt in the first Falcons game, but he was put on IR. He has really improved their team overall, and Manti Te'o replacing him is not something that makes me feel better. And they've really missed Alex Okafor. This is not the same Saints defense that was kind of surprising us early. I was going to lock up the Saints, Wes, and your argument scared me away from doing it, and I'm no longer going to do it.
Is that a first for the lockup?
I think so. I
was going to lock up the Saints, too.
I don't know, Wes.
I had a race to the Browns' honor.
Suddenly, I started
you know what? You're no hero.
Suddenly, I just started seeing what you're saying, and it's going to be – and this is like the great – it's a great rivalry game.
Oh, I knew I could appeal to that. You love this rivalry.
I mean, Sean Payton literally made a choke sign at Devontae Freeman during the last game. I mean, that's
Ben acted
great,
like he didn't remember
stuff.
Doing it, and then yesterday had to acknowledge that that it haunted him for the rest of the game. Okay, whatever, buddy, Sean Payton. But let me tell you something. Matt Ryan could have had 5 picks when they played two weeks ago.
You gotta
Everyone
like
talks about the Drew Brees interception at the end. Matt Ryan was throwing the ball all over the place in the wrong way in that game.
You got into like a Carnival Barker cadence there for a second.
I don't know what that is.
Let me tell you something. And Matt Ryan.
No, because
well.
You know what? That was like the
Step
most
right up.
That was
We've
the most
got monkeys. We've got elephant.
That was the most Sean Payton narrative you could ever imagine.
He's an elephant.
Claiming that he doesn't remember doing a choke sign to an NFL player. I would remember that, I think, if I were a coach. You get flagged, you get fined for that game for running out onto the field, and then this week you say like you don't remember any of it happening, and now you do? Come on, Sean Payton.
We got flying monkeys. We got sad donkeys.
Step up for the bearded lady.
Cotton candy and popcorn.
You got me thinking, Wes, this is going to be a shootout.
What's wrong, Mark?
Huh?
What's wrong? You don't like
it? Continue on.
He had an incident at the circus as a kid.
Yeah, was there a circus?
I don't think I've ever been to a circus.
Really?
Not a large one. Maybe one little tiny one in a field or something.
Circus is overrated. That's why they've been kind of wiped out.
This is the game. I mean, Saints offense got to win it on their own because I don't trust the defense quite enough. Michael Thomas, I'm a little worried that they don't have secondary receivers. Michael Thomas has a higher percentage of, I believe, yards and receptions than any Saints receiver in the Drew Brees era. Brandon Coleman fumbles the ball a couple times last week.
Ted
Ginn's kind of disappeared. I think they missed Kobe Fleener a little bit just to have a tight end out there.
Ginn didn't play last week because he had a rib injury. I think he's supposed to play this week. That would help.
It's good.
But Michael Thomas is a true number one.
He's great.
So the Falcons just need one of these last two games. Right?
I don't know why it sounded so negative. I still think the Saints are going to win this game.
Oh, you're doubting yourself now.
No, I think the Saints are going to win. I'm not going to lock it up because I think you're right. It's going to be a close game. I was really feeling like they're going to run away with it.
Feel a little scared. Little yellow?
Yeah.
Falcons in control of their own destiny if they lose this game still?
Yeah, because they just need one win in the final two games, and they really make it a lot more simple in terms of the Seahawks and the Cowboys. And
they win the division if they win it.
Yeah.
That would be wild.
They have
a
crazy.
I just don't see that happening.
That would be crazy.
There's some crazy. I mean, the Panthers still have. They still have a chance. Do they have a chance for a bye? In theory, it's not going to happen because the Vikings aren't going to lose. But they're still right in it. As weird as this season has been,
they're right there.
Same record as they had last year after 14 games.
Yes, and then they won every game, and then something bad happened in February, but
which caused Sean Payton to make a sign about it months later.
So it all comes together. Moving on, here's a team that let this room down. The Chargers laid a big stinking egg on Saturday night at Arrowhead. So now they're 7-7, which means they have almost they still have a shot to make the playoffs, but they got to win out. It starts with going to the Meadowlands to beat the Jets. The Jets, despite having, on balance, a season that's been a modest success by the standards set by the football cognoscenti entering the season, still 5-9 and have lost 6 of 8. So the Chargers here, a good spot, Greg.
Great spot in terms of their matchups and their scenario, which I think they're the AFC's version of the Lions, where it's not that tough, I don't think. You beat the Jets, you beat the Raiders, the Bills, you just need them to lose in New England this week, and you watch the Titans lose two straight against much better competition, Jacksonville and the Rams, and the Chargers are sliding right into the playoffs.
And it's going to happen. We should want them over Buffalo. I mean, I get that they tripped up last week, but over the span of the last month plus, they've been one of the most fun teams to watch in football.
There's a lot of overreaction to their loss at Kansas City combined with the Jets playing the Saints tougher than people expected. I kind of thought the Saints would have blown out the Jets if not for those two Brandon Coleman red zone fumbles. But the Chargers are clearly the better team. And how many wins do you think the Chargers would have right now if, say, Belichick or Andy Reid was the head coach?
At least 10.
Yeah. 11, because they would have figured, they wouldn't have got the kickers. I just can't imagine Bill Belichick having that kicker situation. He would have planned ahead better. They just signed another kicker this week, by the way. They have another brand new kicker.
I Belichick more than Reed. With Reed, maybe flip the record with Kansas City.
The Chargers aren't the same team that they were, though. Hunter Henry is out for the season. You called him a top five tight end. I totally agree with that. Wesseling called him a top five tight end. Corey Legit is out for this game, and Denzel Perriman, who turned around their run defense, is out for this game. So even if they can win against Bryce Petty, who didn't look that good last week, that's not the same team if those three guys aren't coming back, and Henry, we know, is not coming back.
Well, they are playing Bryce Petty, which means I'm locking it up.
Ooh.
I mean, that's
Bryce Petty made two throws the whole game last week.
You're
basically
sticking with the Chargers. I like it. That's your team.
Stand by. I'm not afraid. This is a bold statement. I don't believe in curses. I'm not a Chargers going to Charger guy. They're a good team. They'll beat the bad team.
They're not going to Charger against the Jets.
I think they're going to make the playoffs. Like Greg said, their route to the playoffs is much easier than people think.
We'll see. I don't know if I believe in curses, but some organizations just mess up a lot.
Yeah, the Bengals.
Chargers are one of them.
I believe that the Bengals have ghosts.
Two other. Mo Wilkerson, who got benched after showing up late to another practice. He is back practicing, but I don't think they're going to play him because they are going to dump him after the season, and they don't want him to get hurt because then the money becomes guaranteed. And Keenan Allen,
yikes,
and we all know how important Keenan Allen is, he is off the injury report. And Manish Mehta had a report that Sheldon Richardson and the Jets might get back together. I don't know. Maybe we should just let that one lie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That defensive line, which was so stocked a couple years ago, is essentially, it was just head cases.
Yeah. Well, they still got Leonard Williams, but yeah.
Got Big Cat.
They got the Big Cat. Let's move on. Week 16. Here we go. Sunday, 1 p.m. start. The Los Angeles Rams, the great team of Around the NFL. Team of Oh, yes, they destroyed a reckoning in Seattle. They destroyed the Seahawks. They are 10-4. They lead the NFC West. They can get a top seed still in the NFC. And now they go to Tennessee to face the Titans, who have lost two straight and look every bit like a team that's going to limp their way out of the playoff picture. Do they stop the bleeding in Week 16, Mark Sessler?
The Titans?
Yeah.
No. I mean, this Rams team, you look at their point output every week, they are pouring on 35, 40. They cross 50 points at one point. I mean, they are destroying teams with their offense. And you watch, go back and watch how Jimmy G, with nothing around him, carved up this defense in the final quarter. He took the lead twice. And the Titans do not have a terrible defense, but they could not get anything. They could not stop Jimmy G. I don't see them stopping the Rams. It has been, they're going to get a home playoff game for the first time since 1985. I think we can all get behind that because we may go to it too. But this Rams team has got to be looked at with all the injuries in the NFC as the team that I think is the most dangerous outfit and is going to be the toughest to take out.
I really hope the Titans lose their last two games. And it'll be so fitting that Matt Castle will have cost them the playoffs. And we can have a frank discussion about the fetishizing of veteran security blank-up quarterbacks instead of a better backup quarterback situation. Matt Castle should have never been on this roster. It's going to cost them. They would have won that Dolphins game because the Dolphins played so awfully with any other quarterback.
That's true, but they in no way deserve it anyways. And ultimately, if that happens, they'll have lost four straight games to end the regular season with Mariota. And I think it's because they get out-coached every week. Bruce Arians out-coached them, Mike Malarkey. Kyle Shanahan out-coached Mike Malarkey. Now he's got to go up against McVay and Wade Phillips. Good luck. And then I think if they go 8-8, there could very well be a change for Marcus Mariota in the head.
The one time that they went up against a true AFC power, the Steelers, it was an embarrassment. They got wiped out in that game, and they've not shown anything since.
They moved the ball really well once they went to hurry up last week, and Rashard Matthews kind of complained about the coaching staff. Or at least we got to let Marcus call the plays more often and do that. The second they did that, about midway through the second quarter, they basically did whatever they wanted on offense too. So maybe we'll see a little more of that this week.
A little under the radar this week, but it's a big deal because Greg Zuerlein, who's been one of the best kickers in the NFL this season, he was just elected to the Pro Bowl. He's done for the season, herniated disc in his back, and the Rams now have signed Sam Fikin to be his replacement. It sounds like a made-up name for a kicker, and you're going to insert this guy, this no-name, into the middle of a Super Bowl chase, and
tricky.
We'll see what happens.
Concerning.
It's concerning.
It's a shame. Greg the Leg was going to break David Akers' single-season record for points by a kicker. He only needed, I believe, 8 more points over the final two games to do it.
They still might have the best punter in the league, and they still might have the best return man in the league in Farrell Cooper.
The best special teams in the league.
Slipping under the radar. But the reason they scored all those points last week was more about the special teams in the defense, and Farrell Cooper especially setting them up on the other side of the 50 every single possession.
My one last plea for Sean McVay, Coach of the Year. The Rams' 17.3 points per game difference from last year is the highest in the Super Bowl era by more than 2 points per game. They have the greatest increase in yards per drive, scoring rate per drive, and TD per rate per drive of any team in the league this year. The Redskins have the greatest decrease in yards per drive and the third greatest decrease. That's the offense he was running last year. He has made that much of a difference in the NFL.
Don't we think he's wrapped that up?
I keep hearing from Mike Zimmer fans and Doug Peterson and Doug Marrone fans, and that's fine, but we see what those guys do every year. We see those kinds of coaching jobs every year. We don't see what McVay – I've never seen what McVay's done.
All right, 17-17 NFC divisional playoffs. Lions hanging around the Rams at the Coliseum. Everyone's shocked.
Wild card, yeah.
Well, wild card, excuse me. And here we go, 45-yard attempt by the Rams to win it at the end of regulation. Do you trust Sam Fikin or Johnny Hecker? I'm sending Hecker out there. That guy can kick. If he could punt, he could kick.
I'm trusting John Fossil. Whatever he does and sprinkles on his special teamers, it all works.
Yeah, you never know with
maybe kickers. He'll be good.
You never know with kickers. The Chiefs picked up Harrison Butker, and he was an improvement on the guy they had before.
That's true. Moving on.
Dan out on Fiker.
I got a bad feeling about the Fiker. You know, because the team of ATL, we feel close to them. I don't want some outsider, this Fiken character, ruining everything as kickers tend to do. I'm just nervous about it.
Is his name really pronounced Fiken or Ficken?
I don't know. The Denver Broncos are 5-9. Brock Osweiler played really well against the Colts, but it was against the Colts. Now he goes to Washington to play the Redskins. Wes, we don't have to talk about this one for that long, but what is something to watch for in this game, you think?
Will Paxton Lynch play or not? Does he have a two-game window here to do something, anything, to make John Elway have second thoughts about addressing the quarterback situation? But I think here's my idea for a game like this, week 16, week 17. Let's start experimenting with the broadcast. This isn't radio. We don't need somebody mansplaining the game of NFL football to us while we're watching it. It's a good time, like with technology changing, people going streaming. You need like a Mystery Science Theater 3000 type of feel to these games just for the entertainment value. Nobody wants to watch Broncos versus a depleted Redskins team right now. Let's start experimenting with a broadcast.
It's not
what do you want them
monster
to do?
Like I said, some kind of Mystery Science Theater 3000 thing, like just for four guys in a podcast.
Any ideas?
Four guys in a podcast studio.
All right,
now you're cooking with gas.
Little, you know, subversive, maybe a little irreverent.
Little bit of mirth.
Little bit of mirth in the booth, you know.
I mean, I like the plan. There's a lot of great games this weekend, and you just essentially assigned the four of us to watch Broncos Redskins as a group.
Well, the massive pay.
There's the catch.
I'll do it.
If there's cash attached to it, I'll watch anything.
And it removes Catalano and Lofton from the broadcast.
Damn. Shots fired. I thought Catalan's been okay. You got a problem with Catalan?
I don't think the duo works well.
What about the guy downstairs, Tasker? Did a nice job in the Blizzard game.
It's usually Tasker's with Steve Berline.
Tasker's with the old Berline and McCarthy. That's a
I like McCarthy.
Tasker was at the snow game, though, with Lofton.
They had to bring out all the old Bills heroes for that.
Sometimes he does sideline reporter, but sometimes he's the third man.
He's versatile. He's very versatile.
As a pro.
Totally. Special teams ace. Let's move on. The Jacksonville Jaguars, 10-4. They have won 7 of 8. Oh, man. And they still can get into that top 2 seed territory to grab a bye if some things go their way and they take care of business. It starts on Christmas Eve against the 49ers, who are 3-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo as their starting quarterback. But consider this a major test for the young passer, because the Jags defense has been making QBs look silly all season. Greg?
They have so many guys that, like Malik Jackson, I feel like, I don't know if he's been mentioned on this show at all this year just about, and he has been dominating for last week.
We've actually mentioned him constantly every week, every show.
I mean, they have so many guys you don't know who to talk about. Yannick Ngakoue has 11 sacks and 6 forced fumbles. He's like he's the new Robert Mathis. It's shaped a little different, but just that speed around the edge and getting the forced fumbles. Jimmy G's been great, but I don't know. I see that streak ending this week, and that's why I shall lock this game up.
10-4 locking up against a 4-10.
I'm sort of.
I mean, in theory,
Darren around here.
I mean, in theory, that's a lot closer. That's the same point spread as Bears, Browns, or it's lower than.
I locked up a team that has won one game. I've locked up a team that's won one game since 2014. I think that's a little bit less.
The Saints would have been a bigger favorite.
You know the rules. It's a. No one's saying anything. It's you got to look in the mirror. Did you look in the mirror?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
You were good with it.
I'm sort of jealous of 49ers fans right now because they get to experience one of the greatest perks of being a sports fan, the endless possibilities of having a young franchise-altering talent. And that's what Jimmy G looks like to me. And let me work 49ers fans into a little hysteria here. When I watch Jimmy G play, these are some of the names that I think of. He has Joe Montana footwork on rollouts. He has Aaron Rodgers' ability to throw quickly and with accuracy off platform. He doesn't need to set his feet.
Decent.
He, like Kurt Warner, he has a quick release and hits people in stride so they can run and make plays after the catch. Like Tom Brady, he has ice water in his veins in the two-minute drill. And like Tom Brady, he spreads the ball around to 8 or 9 different guys and moves the chains instead of scoring really quickly. He knows how to keep his defense off the field. He's got some elements of – he's not a guy who's killing teams outside the numbers and down the field, and I don't think he's ever going to be that guy. But he does have some elements of some great quarterbacks.
That NFL Films Wired piece, I think, that they aired on
– yeah, that was great.
Turning Point. Is that the right name for the show? Was fantastic. The way that he coaches up the receivers to me, like that's how you make your teammates better. That he's speaking very specifically in terms of the coverage and the routes that they're going to see and coming up with a plan to help Trent Taylor and whoever else it is, Kendrick Bourne, get open. I mean, that's it. That's quarterback play.
That was the best part of that film was him talking to the receivers. I agree.
Moving on, the New York Giants, 2-12, travel to Arizona to face the 6-8 Cardinals, one of 3 games on the schedule with no playoff implications. Mark, if you got assigned to this game on Sunday, what would you be watching for?
Well, I guess what I'd be looking for is really the future, because there's nothing at this point outside of New York's draft pick status to latch onto in this game. How about a little game of what's more likely?
Oh, yeah. Let's do it.
What's more likely?
All right. What's more likely? The Giants keep Eli Manning for one more season. Let's say some coach comes in there and reverses course and says, I love Eli Manning. Or Bruce Arians stays in Arizona for one more year. Or the Giants dump Eli as expected, but he winds up with Arians in Arizona.
Well, is Arians back?
I'm going with Eli staying.
Well, that's one of them.
One of the options was just Eli in New York.
Right.
I do not expect Arians back, and I think there's a decent chance Eli is back. I don't expect it, but when you have the owner on the record saying, I want Eli back, there's got to be a chance for him to be back.
Wouldn't it make sense? Let's say the Giants end up, and if they're smart, they stay right where they are. They get the number 2 pick. So then if they really want a quarterback, and I know Rosen and Darnold are the 2 guys, you would get one of them if your organization was looking in that direction. Eli is probably not the worst guy to have in the building when you have a young quarterback. Maybe it goes wrong because Eli is such a stalwart and all that, but I don't get the feeling that he would be Brett Favre-ian. Would it be the worst thing to have Eli for another year, have the kid in the building, maybe transfer over midseason, which wouldn't make nearly as a big wave now because the consecutive game streak is over, because there's a real in-house young kid and not Geno Smith? There's some logic to that.
You have to make that decision in February, though. You have to decide, and let's say they have the number 2 pick, whether they're taking that quarterback in February. Because if not, then what are you doing? Like, you have the free agency period first, and you have to make the decision that, no, we're not going to look around at what's available in trades and free agency.
Now, Bruce Arians has a complex relationship to truth and lies. He's admitted before that he's willing to lie if it serves his purposes. But when the reports came out that he was retiring in October, he tweeted, news to me, nothing could be further from the truth.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I tend to think that Palmer, Fitzgerald, and Arians are all coming back.
He has 2 assistants, Bruce Arians, on his staff that I think are a combined age of about 170.
Tom Moore?
Yeah, Moore's one of them, and I forgot the name of the other. But it's like he's around coaches. He does not have a super young coaching staff. His peers are his age and older in many cases on his staff.
His book made me think he was retiring more than anything. Because he, first of all, he basically wrote that he, like, one more year sounds good. And just the toll that the health takes,
the
has,
health has
been taken on him, and the excitement he has about living the rest of his life with his wife and experiencing things with her before health, you know, really knocks him down. He was pretty adamant about that in the book, and that's why I thought, I've been thinking this is the last year.
Yeah, I talked to somebody in September that's somebody that's close to the game and is plugged in, and he said this. Everyone was aware of this, that this is the end for Arians. Now, was that true? I don't know. Could he have changed his mind from then until now? That's also possible, but I guess we'll find out.
I don't know
out.
If this Cardinals season would have done to change done much to yeah. change his mind. But
that's fair. To answer your question, Mark, what's more likely? I think Eli being back. That would be my response there. Did you give your response, Wes?
Mine is Aaron's returning.
And Eli being?
Eli will quarterback somewhere else.
The Cardinals?
No, that was a third option.
I don't think
it was a go to, triple. Yeah. What's more?
I think Bruce Arians would much rather have Carson Palmer back than Eli Manning.
True. Moving on, the Seattle Seahawks, losers of two straight, and they got decimated by the Rams, of course, at the Clink on Sunday. Now travel to Dallas to face the Cowboys. One of those true loser goes home matches. Wes, I know you're excited.
Yeah, it's you don't get to see the loser goes home match very often, and this one definitely the loser. You're done for the season. I feel better about the Cowboys. All this talk that Alf Morris is somehow close to Zeke Elliott is foolish to the nth degree. Dak basically is sub Jay Cutler without Zeke, and he's in the Phil Rivers, Big Ben range with Zeke. So there's a major difference there. He's 30th in touchdown to interception ratio since Zeke went out. The Cowboys have 75 total yards per game fewer and 10 points per game fewer without Zeke in the lineup. He is as important as any running back in the NFL.
I think it's Elliott through the passing game, too. He makes incredible plays, and it's an incredible option.
Treat them different.
Right. You have to game plan for Ezekiel Elliott completely different than Alfred Morris. And the yardage totals, that had a lot to do with just game planning and how they had to attack with Dak Prescott not seeing the same thing down the field but without Zeke on there. I mean, it's just that he's an incredible asset, and he looks like the guy could have gone away and not kept his body in shape. He did the opposite.
But this Cowboys team, it doesn't look like a good team. It's not a particularly good defense, and they don't have a particularly good passing game. And the fact that they fell apart without Zeke, I mean, they weren't great. They weren't consistent, really, throwing the ball, even with Zeke, especially the Dez Bryant and Cole Beasley. Like, these two teams, if they were playing anyone else, I'd pick them to lose. I feel like they're two teams kind of waiting to be put out of their misery. But the Seahawks are even more miserable right now in terms of their injuries. Michael Bennett's on the field right now, but he does not seem like Michael Bennett. He's playing hurt. He was blocked out of plays by Tyler Higbee last week. Like, even the guys that are there, that are their mainstays, are mostly falling apart.
Let's pick this game. Mark?
I will go Dallas.
Dallas.
Yeah, I got the boys.
I've got the Cowboys, and I predict that they will win these last two games, maybe against, you know, backups of Philly. They'll get knocked out of the playoffs at 10-6, and they'll have convinced themselves all offseason that actually they were a Super Bowl team because with Zeke Elliott, and they were not without him, and that basically ended their season. And they'd be wrong.
I could see that. And then I look at the Seahawks, and I think their organizationally wouldn't have let this happen to the same degree. But you see what happened when Jim Harbaugh left the 49ers. If this was ever a scenario where Pete Carroll was not going to come back, but you have players, Jimmy Graham, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, Cliff Avril, maybe even Michael Bennett. Are these guys all going to be back? I think most of them will not be back. You could have a vastly different roster next season.
And they went all in. They traded for Sheldon Richardson as a win-now move. And who was the other win-now?
Dwayne Brown.
Trade. Dwayne Brown, yeah. who it's good to have around next year for sure. He's good left tackle. But they thought this was their chance, and that the injuries really killed them.
Two of those stars, Bobby Wagner, who has been playing on one leg, like Michael Bennett, Earl Thomas had made some type of comment that it would have been better off if Wagner didn't play on Sunday, which led to that tweet that you referenced Sunday. Greg, on the podcast of him, was it one of those keep my name out of your mouth situations?
Essentially, yes.
Bobby Wagner now has, he's contrite about the situation, and he found guidance on the subject from an interesting place. Let's listen in.
It's funny, I was listening to a Kevin Hart interview last week, and he was kind of, in the interview, he was kind of talking about the way he kind of handles issues and handles things. He likes to face them, you know, head on, don't want to run from them. So, you know, I'm pretty sure y'all going to ask. So in regards to everything that happened, you know, do I feel like I, you know, mishandled the situation? Yeah, there was a better way of going about the situation. I could have did better. And, you know, it's one of those things where you live and you learn.
Gets better.
The crazy thing is, though, Earl Thomas completely refuted that account and said they basically didn't talk. And he said, ain't no patching. If that's in your heart, that's cool. Let's finish strong.
Ugh, tough.
No,
there was no forgiveness in Earl Thomas's heart.
Well, maybe Earl Thomas needs to watch some Kevin Hart, a press tour by Kevin Hart for his latest bad movie. Let's move on. The Monday night, that's Christmas game, Monday afternoon Christmas game, the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Houston Texans. We know the situation with the Steelers after Sunday shenanigans against the Patriots. They need to have any chance to get that first seed back. They're going to have to win out, and it starts with the Houston Texans. That feels like a layup, Greg.
You would think so. This game will tell us something about the Steelers. Like, they should be not drained from last week from an emotional, really, couple weeks against the Bengals, Ravens, and Steelers. They should be ready to put that taste out of their mouth and just destroy this team, because there's really no excuse.
No Antonio Brown, which is not insignificant, of course.
Martavis Bryant had his best game of the year last week. I think that's meaningful. Juju's back. But you know how it works with these teams like the Texans, who are going through the motions at the end of the year. If you let them hang around for a quarter and a half, it becomes a game the whole game. But if you step on their throats at the beginning, they'll quit and you win by four.
They haven't been that feisty, relatively, the Texans, that is.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they got destroyed last week. I think DeAndre Hopkins is the guy. You've got to not let him keep your team in the game. I think that the James Conner injury, everyone's talking Antonio Brown, but the James Conner injury is concerning. You got Stephon Ridley and Fitzgerald Toussaint behind him, behind Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is going to be close to having more touches than DeMarco Murray had in 2014. And you have to go back to guys like Larry Johnson and Steven Jackson a decade ago for a workload like Bell's. And this is exactly what happened last year. You get into the playoffs, you find your way to New England, and Bell can't play the game. They have to find a way in a game like this, where you should be destroying Houston by halftime or the third quarter, and getting someone else in there. He cannot. Am I wrong? No. I feel like the workload thing for him, we saw what happened last year.
And it's tricky because they have to play to win these next 2 weeks now. That was the result of what happened against the Patriots. Very likely they're going to need to play this week, obviously, and then next to get that bye.
Everything that we've seen, including James Conner, who got very little work before he injured himself, is that they're just going to keep using Le'Veon Bell. And when they're done with him, just like when the Cowboys are done with DeMarco Murray, they said goodbye. You wonder if there's a similar plan in place going on behind the scenes in Pittsburgh. But we'll see. Monday Night Football. Monday Night Football. Christmas Night Football. Is it Monday Night Football or Christmas Night Football?
It is Monday night and it is Christmas.
It's the afternoon, though, is it?
One of them is, well, for us, it's 5:30 start for the second.
8:30 p.m. Eastern time, yeah. Kick. Mm. Do we have to have a Christmas night game?
That's the Eagles game, is what, 8:30?
Yeah, is this necessary? In general.
I mean,
schedule gods.
I don't know.
How about we, you know, everybody spend time with the family.
That's not how the NFL does.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Do you know what the highest rated game of the 2016 season was?
Probably the Steelers win on Christmas night.
And both of these Monday games are not the same quality in any way, and they're not only one of them's afternoon games. But I think that probably encouraged their thing.
Have you ever read A Christmas Carol, Greg?
Read it?
Yeah. Or had it read to you, or some adaptation of it?
Certainly at school as a child.
Ebenezer Scrooge, what did he learn?
He learned about the spirit of Christmas.
And that it's not all about
making money, you know.
And ratings.
Right.
Well, I think the NFL is all about money.
What if like three...
On the NFL Scrooge?
What?
I think the NFL has not learned the lessons that Scrooge learned.
What if three ghosts came to Roger Goodell's estate in Westchester, and I'm just going to stop right here.
This is Ghost Week on the ATN podcast?
It seems like it. All right, so the game, yes, will be the Raiders, 6-8. Their season ended with that loss to the Cowboys, kind of put their season out of its misery, if you will. And now the Eagles, who bounced back on offense anyway without Carson Wentz. On defense, it was a different story, Mark. They struggled. Are you going to be watching that side of the ball closely? Are you going to be watching this game? A lot of stuff.
I'll be watching it extremely closely. And, I mean, I don't know, the defense, you went into Seattle, you gave up 24 points, you gave up 35 to the Rams. That's pretty much what everyone seems to do. And then suddenly you have Eli Manning throwing for almost 500 yards on you last week in what was a shootout out of nowhere. 29 points given up. I don't know. I don't want to be overly worried about it because you got the Raiders, the Cowboys. You're probably going to have home field advantage, and you got times to figure out these issues. But I do wonder what's happened to Philly's defense a little bit over the last
Raiders,
couple weeks.
If nothing, are going to be loose. They got nothing to play for. The season's over. They're already not with their family on Christmas. Like, we might as well win the game. So maybe they actually come out and put some points on the board and put a scare into the Eagles. I don't know.
No, that's one theory.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's
an interesting
theory. That's all I got.
No Donald Penn in this game. Their left tackle hasn't missed a game in years. This is a perfect recipe for the Eagles to get their act together on defense. And I think they'd really like to, you know, because it sounded like they're going to sit their starters in week 17 if you're reading between the lines. And they could even, if for some reason the Vikings lost on Saturday night, which is very unlikely, they could do something I always think it should be the move. You rest your starters in week 16. Play them in week 17. Mm. Give them Christmas off. Who wouldn't like that?
Or don't rest your starters at all.
That's even better.
A lot of theories being bandied about this late in the show.
Nick Foles, major downgrade in arm strength from Carson Wentz, I noticed. You already know he's not as athletic in the pocket, but still, four TDs and no interceptions. With this coaching staff, which is this offensive coaching staff with John DeFilippo and Frank Reich and Doug Peterson, I think they can coach up just about any quarterback. And the most amazing stat of the year might be that 25% of the quarterbacks in the playoffs are going to be guys who were on Jeff Fisher's roster last summer. Case Keenum, Nick Foles, and Jared Goff. And they're all playing really well without Jeff Fisher and his offensive coaching staff.
Those are the top three seeds.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I don't know. Was it an Onion article that came out yesterday that Jeff Fisher was interested in the Browns job? Was that a real story?
No, it's multiple jobs. He was interested in coaching again. It's not necessarily.
There's buzz building again. I just think it's reached the point where you can no longer sell a fan base on Jeff Fisher. He's become an NFL punchline.
If you are one of these teams that, if they ever wound up a long-time losing team with Jeff Fisher as the coach, that fan base, any one of those fans has the right to jump ship. You can't do that to the Bears, the Browns, the Bengals, whoever at this point. There's no Jeff Fisher coming in anyone's life.
All right, so there you go. There is Week 16 preview. As I said, the Week 16 is spread out over 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Had to be that way. Couldn't just be one way. It had to be over 3 days. So what we're going to do is the next time you hear from us, our flagship show, instead of Sunday night, we want to get everything all in one nice little package with a bow on it. Tuesday morning, we'll be recording a show. We'll get it up as soon as possible to you, covering all 16 of these games. So that's the next time you hear from us. The next time you see us, if you want to, first of all, you can check out the NFL.com/ATN video channel, which has all our video work throughout the season, including our Tuesday show. NFL Pick'em, which we're handing out gifts this week. So
seasonal.
The picture of you catching a gift, I sent that as
surprise,
a tease to the audience.
That was exciting.
Some boxes flying
around. We've got snow falling. It's going to be a big hit.
NFL Pick'em on NFL Network, 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. Eastern. We're down to two viewings, so at least we've plateaued at two, and it's not cut down any further. What about the theory, Greg, that you had that, well, the fantasy playoffs and all that, there's like 4% of fantasy players are still in the playoffs now. What happened to our era?
Well, my theory last week wasn't a theory. It was the fact that NFL games were literally on our network throughout the day on Saturday, which is also true of what the third airing would be this week, Ravens and Colts. Go check that out.
What about the fourth airing? What happened to that one?
That's just gone. I guess fantasy's getting that.
Wiped away.
All right, let's get out of here. So happy Merry Christmas to everybody. That the next time you hear from us will be on the other side of that. Dan Hans is signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, and Lindsay Fulton behind the glass. Till Tuesday.